This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
The story coming into the draft was Shedeur Sanders, and the story coming out of the draft is also Shedeur for reasons we never saw coming. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Perl, we sat here on Friday. We said, wow, it's pretty surprising that Shedeur didn't go in the first round. Well, didn't go in the second round, third, fourth, finally in the fifth round. The Cleveland Browns swoop in at pick 144. They had already taken a flyer on a quarterback in Dylan Gabriel from Oregon. So we're asking, why did Shedeur fall so far?
By the way, we knew on Friday that there was a chance because the Browns had already announced in so many words that they wanted Arch Manning next year. The Giants already took Jackson Dart. Those were the first two picks. And then we had all these reports that the Saints weren't into Shedeur. That was why.
And the Steelers didn't have a second round pick.
So I thought, okay, a lot of times guys fall the third round. I thought Shedeur would go in possibly, if not the second, the third round. And then the third round came. But I started noticing something, Maggie. Start noticing all the think pieces, all the takes. And I think teams saw all that noise and said, I don't want that noise in my building. And that was, I think, a good word. There was a lot of noise out there about Shedeur. I think teams must have noticed that. Maybe I'm naive to think that anybody's on Twitter on a team, but I just think that all of a sudden people are shredding the NFL and saying teams don't know what they're doing. And the coach might say, oh, gosh, I don't know. This seems like a lot of extra stuff for a backup quarterback.
Well, I think that's it. To take it down to a cliche, the juice ended up not being worth the squeeze. And I think that there's, and when I say that, two things. One, I do think the football aspect is part of this. I think that if Shedeur was this ultra talent, he is talented. I'm not saying he's not talented. But if he was this can't-miss quarterback prospect, he's gone. Maybe not in the first round, but definitely in the second or in the third, because teams will overlook and have overlooked way more than a guy being a little flashy or having a famous dad if they really think they're going to help him win.
Cam Newton had so many issues with his dad and the money at Auburn at a time when, and his dad was, I think, admitted that he took, was offered this bribe. Like, nobody liked the situation with him, and there was no doubt he was going number one.
Wasn't even a question.
Yeah, because he's 6'5".
Like Jameis Winston, there was stuff going on with him at FSU.
But Jameis Winston was incredibly successful. You're absolutely right. If there's enough obvious talent,
right,
you can ignore everything else.
Right, and so this is where I think the Sanders family really had their miscalculation. Either they were getting bad intel on what teams really thought of Shedeur. Maybe they didn't want to disrespect Dion. Maybe they didn't feel like it was worth it, to be honest. I have no idea why. But they either weren't being honest because Shedeur did not treat the pre-draft process like he was competing with the likes of Dylan Gabriel and Tyler Shuck and Jalen Milroe and these other quarterbacks who came off the draft, the Will Howards and the Kyle McCords. He clearly thought that he was a step above them and clearly thought the NFL viewed him that way. I think clearly, because that's why you don't throw at the combine. That's why you don't go to the Senior Bowl. That's why maybe you mail in a couple interviews or you don't prep for them as much as you should have, which is a criticism that Brian Daboll had of Shedeur via Todd McShay. So stay with me on that. You don't act that way if you feel like you're fighting for your life. When you're fighting for your life to be drafted into the NFL, I don't think you treat it in a way that could come off as cavalier, at least on the outside. They thought they had it in the bag. Clearly, they didn't. And That to me is the biggest reason. Is it the only one? No, but I think it's the biggest one to me.
Yeah, I think the first thing you said about the football wasn't quite, I think you can overcome all that if the football is good enough. It's a funny thing with quarterback too. You need a guy who's going to fit the locker room perfectly. He's going to fit that quarterback room, especially if he's not going to start. If the Giants had taken him at number three and he could have played this year, then maybe it wouldn't matter how big his personality was. But he's got to be a backup once he gets to the second round. And again, if you're running a team, Maggie, would you have brought in a second-round backup, Shedeur Sanders? You might have thought twice about it, being like, oh, boy, I don't know.
Well, it depends. Am I the GM or am I the owner? Because I can see the Browns owner kind of liking this. You know, the Browns kind of went
excitement.
From... Yeah, I mean, what was interesting about a Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco, Dylan Gabriel bake-off now with Shedeur, it is much more interesting. So I'll give the Haslams credit.
Or you might
I don't ever give them credit. I'll give them credit for making the team a lot more interesting.
Or you might think, oh, man, I just didn't have to use a first-round pick to get a quality starter. My player comp for Shedeur Sanders is Kirk Cousins, in a way.
Well, for Stefanski.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, he's a good... I think he could be a really good quarterback, but I think he's a bit system-dependent because... And again, you did point out he went to Colorado. I don't think he's built for a place like Pittsburgh where he's going to have to play in bad weather all the time. I think if you get him in the right offense in a dome, for example, and he can just throw the ball 45 times a game and be point guard, he'll be really good.
Cleveland is the opposite of that.
Well, I'm just saying, I just think that I don't think teams want to do all that for a guy whose upside is Kirk Cousins. I think they do all that for Patrick Mahomes. I just think he's good, not great, and the extra stuff. But you're right about Cleveland. Yeah, I know Cleveland isn't all that tough. That's why I would start Flacco there. That guy's still got a big arm.
Yeah, the odds are that Kenny Pickett's going to... I mean, who cares? The part of it is just like how this is going to go throughout the season, because you get the sense that whoever wins the job out of camp, I would be shocked if that's the person who ends the season as the Browns quarterback, partly because you want to make an evaluation of these guys and partly because it's the Browns. And I'm sorry, nothing ever goes right or as planned or anything for them.
I really like Dylan Gabriel, by the way. I just was looking at his game log. He torched Michigan in Michigan.
Yeah.
I know it was the system there, but he's a good quarterback. Poor guy is now in a gigantically crowded quarterback room.
I know. Well, we just did our stock up, stock down, the M&P 500, which if you missed, you can find on the Odyssey app where you can do the rewind function. We have a podcast every day, Sirius XM channel 375, if you guys didn't know about our move over to a different channel. But that's why I thought Dylan Gabriel came as my stock down, and not his fault. It's just, this is a tough quarterback battle for him.
We got into a funny one. I had Jalen Milroe as my stock up. I feel like Seattle is the perfect spot. And you weren't sure.
Yeah, no, get to Jalen Milroe. I wish that he had gone to a different place. But why? We can get to that in a minute.
It's the Ravens. He's on the Ravens West. It's a perfect spot.
Yeah, I'll tell you why I didn't love it for him in a moment. But quickly, our pal Big Dave is in Kentucky. Dave, it's been a minute. How are you, Warden?
I'm good. How are you guys doing? Y'all sounded great.
Thank you. What do you think about Shedeur Sanders? Why did he fall to the fifth round, Dave?
The reason he fell is because the expectations were way too high to start with. And the reason I say that, and first let me preface this by saying, no, I'm not trying to disparage the kid at all. I think he's got some talent. ESPN, Mel Kiper, and a couple other folks should be embarrassed this morning for the way they handled it. They made absolute fools out of themselves. The real football people never had him ranked that high to start with. And y'all know as well as I do, NFL teams don't do evaluations during the regular college season. You know, the pre-draft process is extremely important. And there's hardly anybody else at the other networks that I listen to at all. But I do, Mike Tannenbaum is one of them that I do listen to because he's a practical guy. He's a former GM. He broke it all down really well this morning. The predictions that people like Mel Kiper, who needs to retire, made were based on hype. I mean, that Dion and his folks created. And I'll tell you another one of the narratives that people keep using to prop this up is the fact that they were 1-11 before he came. He changed the whole. No, he didn't. They rolled the entire roster over. Dion did. And I'm not saying that Shedeur shouldn't get partial credit for that, because he absolutely should. But if you look at his numbers, even look at some of the highlight reels that they use, it's of him throwing the ball up and among four people, and the best receiver and athlete in the entire draft, jumping up and pulling it down. His completion percentage, you realize that like 54% of Shadur's completions were within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage. I mean, but this was all hyped up to start with. The fall shouldn't have really been that much of a fall. The reality of it is, from a talent perspective, he probably should have been a second or third round draft pick anyway.
Yeah, Dave, it's a good call. The only thing is, even if he was a second round projection, which some people did have, to be fair. Thanks. Yeah. Good to hear from you, pal. Fifth round, that it still is a pretty lengthy fall, but Dave mentioned the Mel Kiper situation. Mm-hmm. So we have some sound of that. If you are not glued to your TV all weekend long, you have a life. Good for you. I'm envious because we all want this to happen. Mel Kiper having kind of a meltdown, if you will. He was disgusted by Shador's fall to the fifth.
For Deion Sanders and Shador Sanders, all I can say is I think it's disgusting. I don't understand what the heck's going on with this. Fifth player on my board. It's never happened before in 47 years where a player that high has dropped this far into the fourth round. A quarterback that's sitting there in round four with other quarterbacks being taken who aren't as good as Shador, aren't even close, in my opinion, in terms of accuracy, toughness. Arm strength is certainly more than good enough.
Okay, so now Mel and Lewis Riddick on the set got into it over Shador.
This is not about can you play the position. This is about do we want you to play the position for us. That's what this
game. Why wouldn't
came
they,
about.
Lou?
Well, look, that's a whole other discussion that we've had in many different ways for weeks
I would
and
say
months
that,
now.
Is not one of the toughest quarterbacks you've ever.
But Mel, this isn't about this
Mel.
Isn't about
it has to be.
Yeah, this isn't about quarterback traits and quarterback characteristics, personal football. That's not about this. This is about this is personal.
Has he had an off the field issue? No, he has
Mel,
not.
Mel, you're not. You don't have to sell it to me.
The happy chime of the draft pick being in while they're going at each other is such a great juxtaposition. Now Reese Davis getting into the action, scolding Mel Kiper, saying that the NFL has spoken on Shador.
I don't know what we're talking about here.
You're right. Mel, the draft has spoken.
That's right. That's the key, Mel. It's not putting a value judgment on whether those who passed are right or wrong. They did.
Yep.
So now, whenever you're in circumstances in life, whether you like them, whether you don't like them, whether they're fair or whether they're unfair, you might have to deal with them.
That's
and
right.
Now Shador Sanders has to deal with it.
Pearl, tell me, it got a little after school special here, I felt like, with Reese Davis. Like, Mel, wake up. It's reality. But Mel gets the final word, and he takes on the entire NFL draft complex while doing it.
Boomer Esiason was not happy when he was a second-round pick.
Tom Brady was not happy.
They dropped. How'd they turn out?
And you know what?
Nobody's arguing that.
My
that
point
can
is, Reese, the NFL has been clueless for 50 years when it comes to evaluating quarterback. Clueless. No idea what they're doing in terms of evaluating quarterback. That's proof. There's proof of that.
How many times
we know exactly what we're talking about with quarterback. They don't.
Nobody's batted 1,000 there, though.
That's correct.
Right?
Who in the hell is Mel Kiper, in a way?
Well, it was just really funny because, you know, Mel's right out here probably with about the same hit rate, if not more, than the GMs who are actually making these picks.
No. Mel? Oh, my God. Mel's got some real bad. The Matt Barkley, Jimmy Clausen Mel? Mel falls in love, and then he can't let go. It's not good. He's had a bad. I mean, there's been all sorts of social media. He's had a bad record on quarterback. It's such an arrogant statement to say that he knows more than the NFL teams, when clearly the NFL teams have more information than he has, because he had no idea that Shador was going to fall. He was flabbergasted. And it didn't seem like anyone in the NFL was that surprised. He was like, wait, what? It feels like, I agree, it feels like Mel is out of touch because it felt like the other insiders were a little more plugged into what was happening.
Yeah, I just think who anyone thinks that Mel Kiper's like going to get fired over this or that he's going to get demoted, like, I don't see that.
Well, I feel like they're working Mel out.
Really?
Yeah, that's my sense. I don't.
He was pretty front and center all weekend.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I just got the sense like, ooh, it feels like there's a new group that's coming up, but just a natural.
No, Mel created an industry. I mean, or helped create an industry of draft nicks. you know? So, yeah, of course he's going to have to now fight off the next generation.
I just think it matters. I mean, maybe it's for inside, but the fact that, like, Jeremiah is, like, some of his mock drafts, like, oh, he knows exactly what's happening. There's just a sense, I think, amongst fans growing that Mel does not know what's going to happen where the other insiders do. That's, I'm not saying that. I just think that I noticed that on social media. It's like, wow, Mel is, you can't have a, I don't know if you can have a character there. Like, he used to be good. Like, it was important.
I think it's compelling TV. Like, watching him just have to sit there, pick after pick after pick, where he said Shador Sanders was the best quarterback in the draft. Meanwhile, Cam Ward has already had his party. He's in Nashville. He's doing press conferences with Warren Moon. Like, it's, he's already probably found a place to live. Mm. And meanwhile, Mel's still sitting there waiting for Shador to come off. Like, it was almost like Aaron Rodgers sitting in the green room or something. It was like the analyst version of that, watching him squirm and then getting defensive about it. Compelling television.
Yeah,
to me.
I'm not sure that's exactly where we're at with Mel Kiper. I mean, maybe you're right that it's like a Lee Corso kind of thing, but I'm not sure I see. I think Mel kind of got hurt by this.
I do think, though, there's a conversation even beyond just Mel Kiper that I think, and I said this a bunch over the weekend, there needs to be a real reckoning of, like, what the hell happened, right? Like,
with Shador.
Yes. Because even take Mel Kiper aside.
Yeah.
Almost every mock draft, every draft expert, old, young, new, been doing this for 50 years, they all said either this guy was somewhere between top five pick to day two pick. Like,
top 40, I think most people would have said.
Right. And it is not normal for that kind of player to fall to the fifth round.
Yeah.
And it feels like, I think a lot of people are calling and then talking about how they feel duped. They feel like they watched that show and saw Mel Kiper talking about Shador Sanders while Cam Ward's walking up to the podium.
Well, that's what Big Dave is saying. The expectations that were too high. But I think the Sanders just blew the draft process.
But how does that happen? Like, that's, like, to me, and Pearl's talked about maybe, like, you know, they're just kind of you being Dion mouthpieces and they're pushing an agenda that just isn't real. Well, that's bad. Like there needs to be a whole change in how this works, because I don't think that that's good. I don't think that talking about a guy as if he's a number one pick and he goes in the fifth round, they look foolish. I totally agree with Dave in that. And I we're getting some answers, but it still feels like there's a mystery of how do you go from a first-round quarterback to fifth round? And in the NFL, it's like we all had him in the fifth round. It's like, well, how the hell did that happen? We've been talking about this for 2 months.
I agree. That's why we're asking you, why do you think he fell? I've been open. I said I think it was the pre-draft process that they did not take seriously enough. Well, I think that hurt him a lot.
I saw this. I mean, the Mel stuff started even before the draft. I put out this tweet where Mel said that Shador, the thing is, he got battered and bruised in every game and never once said a negative word about his offensive line. I was like, oh, what? Huh? And people were like, I was like, what is going on with Mel? He's got some blind spot here. But then, you know, he said he'd retire if Jimmy Clausen wasn't a hit, and then Jimmy Clausen wasn't a hit and he didn't retire. I don't think I know you think it's like compelling TV to see him, but wrong. I think there's going to be ramifications of this. I think in 3 years, ESPN will have a different format. I think the draft coverage has changed, too. Now everybody's seen, there's so much more information out there. 20 years ago, it was Mel or bust.
Right.
Now there's every kind of insider. There's all this information flowing around. The mock drafts get more accurate every year. It's kind of crazy, actually.
Coming up next, we'll get the thoughts of someone who sat in these war rooms, sat in these draft rooms, had the discussions about who to take, when to take them. Amy Trask is going to join us next. Don't move. It's the Maggie and Perloff Show.
Welcome back. Maggie and Perloff breaking down an exciting NFL draft. Maggie, are you surprised the ratings were so high up?
No, yeah. I'm not surprised, because everyone had to tune in to see where Shador was going to go.
Yeah, because there were really no other players. It was a kind of a weak skill position draft. Even number one pick Cam Ward wasn't that excited, but you're right. You had to find out where Shador. Everybody talked to me this weekend about 500 people said, what do you think of Shador?
Well, that's why we want to get the thoughts of someone who's been in these war rooms, been in these draft rooms, has had conversations, whether you take a guy, whether you don't. And that is Amy Trask, now of CBS Sports Network. She was the CEO of the Raiders. And her book, You Negotiate Like a Girl, is phenomenal. And if you have any young women in your life who are graduating from college, I think that's the perfect gift, because it shows you what's capable and maybe a field you never thought possible. Amy, thanks so much for getting up early and joining us today. How are you?
I am well, and there is no such thing as too early to join you guys. Uh-huh. And thank you, Maggie, for that lovely, lovely introduction. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Why, Amy, I mean, how good is Maggie?
Well, it's true. I love your book, and I think it's great for young women. And it's, you know, for anyone, men too, it's great. You'll all get something out of it. But I read it, and I think for young women, it is amazing. Amy, we got to tap into your expertise. Your best reason, why did Shedeur Sanders fall to the fifth round?
There's an expression, groupthink. And I've always hated that expression because I don't think there's anything that involves thinking as to groupthink. I often refer to it as the March of the Lemmings. When he started falling, my immediate thought was other teams are going to follow suit. They're going to keep doing. Teams don't like, for the most part, to step out of line and do something different than other teams. There really is a groupthink mentality. I was fortunate to work for a man who didn't give a damn about groupthink. And frankly, it's for that reason I have the career I do. But teams don't like to do things, for the most part, most often, as a general rule, that is different from that which many other teams do.
Well, isn't that work against their best interest, though? If are there teams that are smart enough to recognize that in themselves and say, I want to go against the grain and do what I think is best for my team?
I could jump through this phone cord right now and hug you because you stated that absolutely perfectly and brilliantly. It does work against their best interest at times. And that's why I tried to couch myself by saying, as a general rule, teams don't do that. For the most part, teams don't do that because there are some teams that at times are smart enough to step out of line and do things differently. You stated it perfectly.
Amy Trask is joining us. You know, Amy, what's interesting about the Shedeur story, though, and you bring up groupthink. At first, it seemed like the groupthink was he's definitely a first-round quarterback.
Right.
And then the groupthink sort of changed to say, no, he's not first, second, third, fourth. I feel like LeBron James with the Heatles, not one, not two, not three. Then he ended up with this fall. Do you have any your best guess of why the wins changed so drastically on Shador's evaluation?
I do have some thoughts, and then I want to address how magnificently I think Shedeur handled not only his fall from where he may have believed he would be drafted, but also the phony phone call.
Yeah.
And by the way, I call them phony phone calls because that's what we called prank calls when I was a kid, phony phone calls. There were reports, some of them anonymous, and as you both know, I have a big, big, big gripe with people who speak of, these are kids. You know, these are kids coming out of college. Shedeur is 22 or 23. We drafted young men who weren't even 21 at the time they were drafted. And when you have, quote, grown-ups, close quote, speaking ill or, you know, maybe speaking what they believe to be honestly and directly about a potential draft pick, put your name on it. Put your name on it. If you're the grown-up, put your name on it. But there were stories about him that didn't paint him in a terrific picture in terms of how he comported himself during the interview process. And I'm going to say again, you know what? Even if and to the extent that which we read, that which we heard was true, I'd like anyone listening to this who at the age of 22 or 23 comported themselves perfectly at all times to raise their hand. And I'll tell you right now, my hand is not raised. We often forget that these are young men who are in a position they've not yet been in. And so irrespective of whether or not he comported himself poorly, that was the story that was swirling.
Sorry to interrupt you. I want to ask about your personal experience. I didn't mean to interrupt there. Have you ever had that happen when you were with the Raiders? Did someone ever really bomb the interview, but you guys took them anyway? Or did you see that happen in real time?
And first of all, we're having a conversation. Yeah. Interrupt me all you want. I was talking too much anyway.
No.
You know, Maggie, I recall that we did, but I can't recall who it was. But I do recall there were issues at times about interview processes, about other things. And I just recall who that we did, but I can't recall who it was. And by the way, these interviews, you know, we had a guy come back from the draft, one of our head scouts, and he was so excited to tell me that during the interview process, he asked a prospective draft pick, if you were a vegetable, what kind of vegetable would you be? And all I could think was, I just signed a check for expenses for how much for you to go to the draft. These interviews aren't all they're purported to be.
Amy, what about the fallout from the prank phony call? There were multiple calls. It wasn't just Shador. Is this something the NFL has to deal with right now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Positively, Andrew. The NFL has to deal with this. And if you are distributing electronically or otherwise phone numbers, you've got to put some sort of safety protocols, maybe deliver them in a manner that go to only one person and make that person sign a declaration as to how they're going to secure it. I don't know what the answer is, but there's got to be an answer. And I'll say again that with respect to the phony phone call or the prank phone call, and with respect to his fall in the draft and then ultimately being drafted and his comments thereafter, he comported himself tremendously, maturely, wisely, and I thought in a manner that reflected beautifully on him.
Yeah, for people who don't know, we're talking with Amy Trask, former CEO of the Raiders, now CBS Sports Network. For people who don't know, the NFL sends phones to the draft picks. It's not Shador's like personal number. It's a number that's being used for the draft to make sure they get to these guys. And that number was reportedly like on an iPad maybe or a laptop in Falcons defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich's home. And his son, 21-year-old Jax Ulbrich, found the number, handed it off to a friend, and the friend was the one who pranked them. Amy, if this was your organization and you're the CEO, do you do anything to Jeff Ulbrich? Does he get any reprimand here? The father, who maybe was not protecting this information closely enough?
You know, there's a saying, it's Hanlon's razor. And Hanlon's razor says, never attribute to mendacity that which can be explained by incompetence. So I would have a conversation with him and I would try to find out, did you just make a really big mistake? And by the way, it was a big one if it was a mistake. Or did you do this, you know, with any intention? And I believe it was simply a mistake and I would let that guide how I would proceed. You guys, I'll add, I served on the NFL Security Committee. I was honored to be appointed to the committee by Roger. The NFL Security Committee and the NFL are going to take steps to correct this. I know that from personal experience. They're not going to simply brush this under the rug. The league, the Security Committee, the league as a whole, the league office is going to do whatever possible to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Amy, how about your former team, the Raiders? Tom Brady, the part owner, has a relationship with Shador, and they had two number four picks. They have Geno Smith. Why do you think they didn't select Shador as possibly be a backup for Geno Smith?
I thought they might. My understanding and my assumption, but also my understanding, is they liked the options there at that time more than they liked that possible pick. And I think they had a terrific draft. I was thrilled they picked Ashton Jeanty first. To everyone who said to me, oh, Amy, why would you take a running back in the top 10? I answered with two words, Marcus Allen.
Good two words.
I was like,
that ends the conversation. What are you supposed to say after that?
Good luck coming back from that one. Amy, last one for me. And again, thank you so much for doing this. Perloff and I were talking earlier about, now that Shador is with the Browns, what's going to be Dion's involvement here? Because, you know, Dion is just this larger than life figure. And Perloff is very convinced that Dion would call Jimmy Haslam or the front office or the coaching staff even if Shador's not playing and he feels like he should play. I'm curious if you think that's true. And two, did that happen when you were with the Raiders? Did parents, whether they were famous or not famous, did they call and try to lobby for their kids to get playing time?
And never in my experience. I can't recall any instance in which someone did that. Not even my mom or dad calling to make sure I got more work. And that was, you know, kind of to my relief. No, in all sincerity, I don't remember anyone doing that. And I don't think Dion will do that. I think Dion is going to support his son as best he can, but I don't think that he will do that. And by the way, you know what? Terrific that Shador went to Cleveland for the following reason. That quarterback situation is a big, hot mess. So yeah. He really does. That's a very, by the way, that's a very technical football expression.
Yeah.
Hot mess. And that's what their quarterback situation is. So he's got an opportunity to shine there.
Would Al Davis, former Raiders owner, have enjoyed taking Shedeur Sanders? Or would he have taken him?
I think he would have, for the reasons we discussed earlier, that he didn't stay in line. He was willing to step out of line. He didn't engage in groupthink, which I call group not think. I think he would have enjoyed it.
Amy Trask, the former CEO of the Raiders. You can watch her now on CBS Sports Network. And again, her book, You Negotiate Like a Girl. You got someone in your life who's graduating from college. It's the perfect time to give them this book because it shows you the possibilities of the industries you can be in when you never really thought that was possible. Amy, thank you so much. You're the best.
Thank you for having me. I'm sorry I talked too much. I'm probably over-caffeinated.
No, never, Amy.
No, we want to hear from you. You can never talk too much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so, man, the Shedeur thing. The Jax Ulbrich, Pearl, when you saw that it was, the call was coming from inside the house, so to speak. Like,
yeah.
The fact that it actually came from the son of an NFL defensive coordinator.
Well, by the way, EJ earlier in the show was talking about Shedeur being emblematic of his generation. How about the fact that they filmed it and put it out?
Yeah.
I mean, that is so Gen, whatever this is, that you couldn't possibly do it. Like, yes, what do you expect in the TikTok era? Not that that's an excuse by any means, but.
No, when we prank called people back in the day, we were trying not to get caught.
Yeah, the fact that this guy wasn't afraid of being caught was interesting.
Yeah, well, everybody's looking for clout. And they think that there's attention and clout that comes from this foolery.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing, too, because I was thinking about this with respect to Joe Shane, the Giants general manager. His son put out a hype video of Jackson Dart on his own personal Instagram the night before the draft. And it was like, well, what is this? Well, it turns out they were targeting Jackson Dart. Duh. Like, honestly, if a team had come up and jumped the Giants and taken Jackson Dart, I think Joe Shane would have never lived this down. The fact that you can't, I'm not saying you can control your kids, but don't tell them. And, you know, for Jeff Ulbrich, it's been a tough year.
I don't know. With Joe Shane, his kid might have told Joe you're taking Jackson Dart. At this point, John Mara is probably listening to Joe Shane's kid more because he's the one who wanted Jaden Daniels. I watched that clip again. It's hysterical. Shane goes, I can't get him. And the son goes, well, find a way to get him. It was an unbelievable strategy.
Need you to be more solution-based, Dad.
Oh, my God. The Giants and Jackson Dart. When then Traeger had Jackson Dart at 25 in his mock draft and he knows the Giants, I'm like, oh, they're obviously taking Jackson Dart. I think the Giants are very happy about the Shedeur thing.
One last thing about the prank phone call. We get to Bogish. Just a little lesson when you're trying to publicly apologize to somebody who you've wronged and who you're trying to make amends with. Spell their name right. God.
What do you mean?
He spelled Shador's name wrong in his Instagram post. I mean,
That's not the problem. That's not the problem. The problem was the prank call.
What a bunch of fools. Bogish is here with headlines. What's up?
Guys, we are expecting the official announcement this morning that the Commanders are returning to the D.C. area with a new stadium on the site of RFK Stadium. The team reportedly paying for most of the project, which will include developing the surrounding area. They are hoping the stadium will be ready for 2030.
The Commanders
have been playing in Landover, Maryland since 1997. Or this morning, if you're Perloff.
How many people think it's RFK Jr. Stadium?
No thanks. New Broncos linebacker Dre Greenlaw reportedly hurt a quad while working out recently. So again, stop working out. The initial report from NBC Sports Bay Area said the quad was torn and could cost Greenlaw a good chunk of the coming season. But more recent stories say it's just a strain and Greenlaw should be okay by training camp. The Milwaukee Bucks in a 3-1 hole after a 123-109 home loss to the Pacers last night. The game changed when Damian Lillard suffered a likely torn left Achilles late in the first quarter. Without Dame, that 3-1 hole even deeper, but they have no chance other than starting to climb out, says Doc Rivers.
Yeah, I got confidence in all our guys. And so, you know, this is one that, you know, we got to have all hands on. Like, we just got to figure it out.
Starting with defense, the Pacers shot 60% overall last night, hit 18 threes. The Celtics got 37 points from Jason Tatum, 21 from Jaylen Brown to put the Magic down in Orlando, 107-98. Boston can end that series game 5 at home tomorrow night. Tonight's schedule includes game 4 for the Warriors and Rockets in San Francisco. The Dubs, who lead 2-1, upgrading Jimmy Butler and his pelvic contusion to questionable for this one. On playoff ice, the Oilers rallied for a 4-3 win in OT over the Kings for a 2-2 series. The Caps dropped the Canadiens 5-2 in Montreal for a 3-1 lead. Away from the playoffs, the Penguins parting ways with head coach Mike Sullivan. As usual, Sullivan may get another job almost immediately. The Rangers, the Bruins, others expected to go hard after him now that he is on the open market.
Man, does this, I mean, Perloff, it might be your best, it might be your best sports opinion that you've ever had.
That there's only three NHL guys.
There's basically six NHL coaches, that's it, and they all just rotate. The fact that, weren't the Rangers even talking about John Tortorella coming back? Like, you can't make it up.
You can't. I would say that Mike Sullivan's a little more qualified to work again than some of these other guys who get jobs right away again. This one would make a little more sense if you went and got him.
Here's a question. Why has no one done a deep dive on the dearth of quality head coaches in hockey? Because clearly there's not enough. Like, they're not doing enough to foster the coaching pipelines because it's the same six dudes.
I think the other argument is there's too many owners who are unwilling to not hire someone that they already know. And I guess in their defense, when guys have gotten creative and like gone to college ranks and stuff like that, it hasn't always worked out perfectly. But to me, it's more about the owners choosing among the eight guys that they know as opposed to there aren't qualified people.
Why don't they just promote more assistants? Like in other sports, NFL and NBA, they just promote the assistants and give those guys some shots.
I don't think that is necessarily like the structure of things. It's not like offensive, defensive coordinator. And when a guy gets fired, usually his like number two gets fired with him. So you don't, like that's what the Rangers just did. You don't promote the next guy up. Guys don't get hired off of benches to go somewhere else. It's just not the dynamic of hockey.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Like, you're not going to say, oh, look, the Jets have a good team. Let's take their assistant coach and bring him here. Like,
no,
that doesn't happen.
Usually you hire from either the minors, like your AAA team, or a guy who had a job last season and is hanging out at home right now.
Gotcha.
But I have a more serious issue here. And I know, Maggie, you might have this too. I have about four Mike Sullivans in my phone, and I email them all by accident because we had a producer at Sports Illustrated. Did you work with Mike Sullivan?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, but then there's Mike Sullivan, the Giants OC. I did a story where Then there's also Sully. Who's Mike Sullivan.
Who I only found out his first name was Mike like the last time.
He's Mike Sullivan on your phone?
No, but the problem is when I email the guys, I always email. The producer, I've emailed all three different, emailed and texted them three different things.
Thinking one was the other.
Yes, because you put an SU, and you're like, okay, then Sullivan comes up. And now if we ever get to talk to this NHL coach, it's going to be in the mix.
Your fifth Mike Sullivan.
Yeah, I would email the Mike Sullivan, the NHL coach, and be like, hey, your Celtics lost game 3. He'd be like, what?
Suck it.
Although Mike Sullivan, the NHL coach, probably is a Celtics fan.
He might be.
I'm trying to think of how many people with the same name I have in my phone. I have a couple of JJs in my phone, and I was too lazy, I guess, to write out the whole, which JJ is it? None are Reddick, by the way, but just who are the JJs in my life? I've got a few.
I got two Dylans that I confuse all the time.
I mean, you've got too many Andrews, Maggie.
Yeah, Andrew. I've got confused multiple times on the show.
Well, you want to know what's funny about that? Because my husband is Andrew.
Right.
But I'm not going to say what his last name is, but I have him saved as his first and last name because that's the night we met. I put his first and last name in the phone, so he's always been that for me.
You're not going to say your husband's last name? That's a state secret?
Just like your vacation. Are people hunting you, Maggie? I don't understand.
No, the question is, does Manny know your husband's last name?
I don't know. I don't know her husband's last name. I thought it was Gray.
Exactly. That's how we're keeping it. Okay. On that note,
you've
got
a very public job.
I'm
going to
pirouette out of this thing. Okay. I was going to make a joke there, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to go to break.
I'm doing an internet search.
Don't do it. No.
Wait, I know his last name. How do you not know his last name?
Oh, I think I don't know. I don't. I'm not.
He forgets everything.
I'm pretty sure you've also said his name on the radio.
Perloff doesn't know my name half the time, let alone my.
I mean, I thought it was Margaret. I'm bummed that it's not.
That is always a shocker. Yeah. That is
just Maggie. Okay, guys. There's one story that Shador Sanders. We see you on the phones. We're going to get to your phone calls, promise. But there's one story that everyone is ignoring because of the Shador thing. We'll hit that next. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. It's been all about Shador Sanders today. The slide, the fall, the plummet to the fifth round. Dominic is in San Francisco, wants to talk about Shador and also the Falcons defensive coordinator, Jeff Ulbrich. You may have remembered him. He took over midseason for the New York Jets as their head coach last year when Robert Saleh got fired. His 21-year-old son found Shador's number and prank called him during the draft saying the Saints were going to take him when obviously they did not. What's up, Dom? How are you?
Hi. Good morning. Sorry, I was in the middle of brushing the dog. Okay. Seriously brushing the dog. When this unfolded,
that's what you call
on my ESPN about the prank phone call, and they were going through it, opening it somewhat slowly, saying it was someone's son. Didn't you guys think it was a little kid?
Yeah, because the last time I prank called somebody, I think I was 12.
Yeah, when I found out the guy was 21, I was absolutely shocked. There's got to be some repercussions and ramifications here.
Yeah, but for who? Not for the dad? For the kid? What are they going to do to the kid?
The dad somewhat for leaving that open. Yeah. I don't know. It seems like a breach.
Dom, thank you for the call. It's embarrassing. I mean, has anyone had a worse 6 months than Jeff Ulbrich? You were basically, you know, the Jets thought that you were going to be, you know, take over for Robert Saleh, and the defense got worse, which is the only reason why you even got the head coaching job.
Oh, yes, that guy.
Yes,
I totally didn't make that connection. I was like, Jeff Ulbrich. So he got a job in Atlanta. Oh, my God.
It was a bad draft for Atlanta.
Atlanta, holy cow. What are you doing?
We will break that all down tomorrow. But meanwhile, George is in L.A., wants to talk about Shador. George, you think it's particularly bad because your Rams passed on Shador Sanders?
Yes, absolutely, Maggie. I don't think the talent level's there at all, to be honest with you. I watched him play at Texas Tech when he played in Lubbock this past season. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of slow in the pocket. Most of his passes are short. And he's throwing the Travis Hunter long range. And he's one of the best receivers in the NFL in the future. I think he's an okay quarterback. He might make the Browns. He might not, to be honest with you. Sean McVay knows quarterbacks. If he thought he had any true interest in Shador, he would have taken him. And I think the Rams are getting ready for next year. Those two first-round picks.
Yeah, well, the Rams, I mean, we just talked about the Falcons. George, thanks for the call. I hope you enjoy the draft. You know, they absolutely fleeced the Falcons to get a first-round pick for next year. As far as the Rams are concerned, they didn't have a lot of picks. Am I right about this?
Traded out, yeah.
Yeah, traded out several times.
They got some good reviews, though. they got the tight end that they wanted.
Terrence Ferguson out of Oregon.
Feels like the Rams are on a bit of a heater. At least in the media. I think there are a lot of expectations growing for that team.
Well, what was most notable, I think, about the Rams is that they drafted zero quarterbacks. So any idea that they were trying to find the heir apparent to Matthew Stafford now, that was not going to happen. They've got, obviously, it's Garoppolo, right, is the backup. So
did they re-sign Garoppolo? Actually, I think you're right, but... Yeah, I mean, the Rams, by the way, the Rams are building a really good team because they've been, there's some teams you give the benefit of the doubt. You know, Les Snead makes a pick right now, you're like, oh, he's the next Puka Nacua. Yeah. Cleveland makes a pick, you're like, oh, he's the next, name one of their last 25 draft picks.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's next Brandon Whedon. It's going to be fascinating. So today, obviously, was all about Shador. And, you know, I'm going to stand by what I believe to be the truth here, which is the football evaluation, while Shador does have some really good traits, no matter what you want to say about him, the kid is tough. The dude is a tough dude, not kid. He's a tough dude. He is accurate, but he was probably never a first-round pick. And then on top of it, I think they didn't treat the draft process as they should have. And Pearl, I'm been somebody who's kind of critical of the draft process. I'm like, the tape should tell you everything.
Right.
But I think we were proven wrong here by Shador, like loud wrong by Shador, because if you don't, it's still a job interview. And it's more than just the tape. It's how you come off, especially with the quarterbacks. It's, do you throw at the combine?
Right.
Do you interview well? The whole thing, everything goes into the stew. And the uber, uber, uber talented people will be picked no matter what. Everyone else has to really work for
it. I'm just curious, that one thing, toughness. That's a quarterback trait? What? Who cares? A linebacker's tough.
Because they keep getting up after they take hits.
Yeah, but you don't. You want your quarterback to get rid of the ball before he takes a hit, so he doesn't get injured.
I think it's just a general football comment. Like, yeah, that's positive.
It's interesting. Yeah, but you never discuss anybody else. That's not a thing that comes up for quarterbacks.
Because generally, if you make it this far,
that's because people are bending over backwards to find good things to say about Shador.
Interesting. Thank you to EJ Stewart. Thank you to Manny Rodriguez. Thank you, Connor Armstrong, sitting in today. Andrew Bogish, Andrew Kaplan, Amy Trask, Jason Lloyd. You guys were phenomenal on the phones today. Thank you, Weedos. We'll see you tomorrow.